And now,
The Money Show
with Bruce Whitfield.
Live, online, DSTV
92.7 and 106 FM.
702.
Let's walk the talk.
Good evening. Welcome to The Money Show, brought to you by Absa. We do more so you can. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP. Welcome to The Money Show this evening. Karen Maughan standing by. She is the legal journalist at News 24. We get a reflect on what's been an extraordinary week, a really an amazing week in terms of the rule of law. I wonder, however, where we go to from here. Karen has always got good insights on that particular front. We're also going to be talking about SAA and an apparent compromise from the South African Airline Pilots Association, the SAA Pilots Association, that will lead to most of them being retrenched, the end of a strike there, and a handful will go through. We'll get analysis on that this evening. We'll play the best bits between 7 and 8. Also this evening, our Friday file, Nomu, a household name, but how much do you know about it? And of course, we cannot do a Friday without the brutal biz quiz. That is what is coming up this evening on The Money Show.
The Money Show
with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
Listening to Ace Magashule this evening, and he's equating the sort of victimization that he feels he is undergoing, the victimization of Jacob Zuma, and equating it to the fight against apartheid, is nothing short of extraordinary. And as somebody who survived apartheid, of course, and survived that level of oppression, I'm astounded that he can make that correlation. But hey, it's his experience. I've been trying to process this week why I've not been overcome with a sense of elation at the victories that the country has seen against those bloody-minded to cause havoc for their own benefit. Jacob Zuma's been jailed. Ace Magashule has been told by not only the ANC, but now the courts that the ANC was perfectly within its rights to suspend him. And no, his amateur hour attempt to wreak havoc on Cyril Ramaphosa and suspend him was not going to stand up to any kind of scrutiny. And I guess, like maybe you feel, I don't know, I'm simply bored with the madness of it all. There's a very clear path for South Africa to choose, and there are those determined to prevent it from happening because it puts them at risk over the decisions and actions that they have chosen to take in the past. Karen Maughan is a legal journalist whose calm and factual reporting this week should have brought you plenty of comfort as she stuck to the rule of law, and she explained exactly what the process was that was being undertaken and some of the madness of the legal strategies that were undertaken this week as well. And it has been, Karen, an enormous week for the rule of law.
Well, I mean, essentially what was happening was the former head of state was playing a giant game of constitutionally potentially devastating chicken with the highest court in the country. And at one point, you know, the police minister is sending an extraordinary letter to the constitutional court saying that, you know, given that there was litigation still impending from the former head of state, that he would hold these orders for arrest in abeyance until, you know, unless he was told otherwise by the constitutional court, subsequently backtracking on that when it became apparent through the Zuma's failed bid to interdict his arrest in the Pietermaritzburg High Court, that that was simply, as Thembeka and Gwaiatobi for the state capture inquiry put it, absolutely nonsensical and completely legally baseless. But there were many moments at which it appeared that, you know, this kind of fatalistic language of Marikana, the potential for massive violence, loss of life, if indeed Jacob Zuma was arrested, I think cast a pall over the entire process. Ultimately, he did hand himself over. He was actually arrested by the police in circumstances where he had been in contempt of a contempt order. He is now behind bars. But the unfolding sort of social unrest that we've seen in KwaZulu-Natal, the language of violence that continues to be employed by, amongst other people, his daughter on social media, certainly creates an environment and an atmosphere when the Constitutional Court will hear this case on Monday that is profoundly problematic.
Yeah, it's profoundly problematic, and one wonders whether legally it counts against him or not. I realize that these aren't his actions, but he's not exactly calling his supporters to order either.
Well, he refused to do so on that Sunday media briefing at the Nkandla homestead. It was explicitly said to him, you know, what do you say to your supporters who are threatening violence, who are threatening mayhem? And he, you know, refused basically to say that he would tell them not to do so. And, you know, there's been a common thread, as you mentioned before. Busisiwe Mkhwebane has compared herself to Robert Sobukwe and said, you know, she was being persecuted like he had by the apartheid state. Jacob Zuma has compared himself to Robert Sobukwe and say he is being persecuted. He has compared the Constitutional Court, the court who has, you know, in its position to uphold the Constitution, which is a democratically founded document which was put in place to prevent the exact abuses of apartheid ever recurring. He is calling them, you know, referring to them as, you know, apartheid functionaries. And then Ace Magashule in this language today, all of which talks to a fundamental undermining of accountability processes and a fundamental suspicion of anyone who demands that, you know, these individuals or figures within who have power are asked to answer questions, asked to account for manifestly poor or potentially corrupt decisions they're made, and are simply asked to be equal as everyone else is before the law.
It's an astonishing abuse of history. It's an astonishing abuse of public goodwill, and it's a very, very dangerous game to play, of course. And one wonders what is going to have to tip in order to restore some sort of sensibility, because there's a huge sense of dis-ease with the politics of all of it. I mean, one feels like the Radical Economic Transformation faction, as it's known, is going to go into some sort of, I don't know, illegal, because it'd have to be illegal, but some sort of dive bar over the weekend to regroup. This is far from over, Karen.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, it's actually damaging to Jacob Zuma. I don't think his faction understands just how profoundly damaging it is, because the court can't take, you know, the court cannot base a judgment on the unfolding scenes in KwaZulu-Natal, but they create an atmosphere. And for rule of law's sake, you know, Dolly and Mpofu's language about telling Judge Jerome Nguni that if he found that indeed, as he did, that the Pietermaritzburg High Court did not have the jurisdiction necessary to, you know, to interdict the imminent arrest of Jacob Zuma, you know, he would be effectively potentially unleashing another Marikana. You know, in circumstances where that case was completely and legally unsound, was profoundly problematic. And the court, you know, the court cannot be held hostage by the threats of violence, by the threats of as we've seen in the past from Jacob Zuma, some form of uprising against what he called the judicial dictatorship. And it's exactly what you're saying. I mean, there is a fundamental betrayal of the Constitution, betrayal of rule of law, betrayal of the interests of all of the society when people in power, or people who have been in power, invoke violence as a mechanism to secure their own interests. And that is exactly what's happening here. And the judiciary and the courts need strongly. Otherwise, the implications for South Africa are extremely dire.
It's a betrayal of history as well. It's a betrayal of the understanding of history. It's the betrayal of the sacrifice upon whose shoulders so many of these people today stand. And it's very un-ANC in all regard. I mean, the ANC will regularly invoke the past. It will regularly invoke its heroes. But this is a fundamental abuse of those heroes, isn't it?
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, what was so heartbreaking to me was when the former head of state compared COVID-19 shutdown regulations to the apartheid state of emergency. And, you know, I mean, that for me was just, it was almost Trumpian to turn around and say that a government's efforts, albeit, you know, sometimes in a you know, lackluster manner, or, you know, there are all kinds of implementation issues which should rightly be criticized. But to compare that to efforts by the apartheid state in the 1960s and 1980s to violently suppress the black majority's uprising against apartheid government is fundamentally disingenuous. And it speaks to, you know, it speaks to this undertone of the state is illegitimate, the judiciary is illegitimate. Anyone who questions or seeks accountability of this particular elite group is illegitimate. And you know, it borders on something that is a massive and significant betrayal of the democracy that, you know, very tragically, in fact, Jacob Zuma was an instrumental part in fighting, for. And this is a person who brought peace to KZN. You know, his legacy in terms of what he was able to do with the ANC and the IFP in that time, you know, it must be recognized and it must be honored. But at the age of 79, facing a corruption trial for the arms deal, facing a far longer term of imprisonment that he currently is experiencing, Jacob Zuma seems to be betraying the very ethos that he fought so hard to secure. And there is something manifestly tragic about that situation.
It is, absolutely. I'm so glad you put it that way, Karen. I mean, Richard Poplack on Twitter this evening summarizing it, saying it's been a bad, bad, bad week for people who think they're smart. Stay in school, read lots of words, and for the love of God, hire decent lawyers. You know, and we can make fun of it, but my goodness gracious me, it feels like the dying gasps of desperation. I mean, essentially, it's been a good week. I know we're talking very negatively here, but it has been a remarkable week. I don't know if 12 months ago many of us would have suggested that, you know, sitting here on this day of July in 2021, this much legal progress would have been made.
You know, the thing about South Africa is that we're a country where people have constantly assumed the worst of us. When the 90s happened, there was this assumption that there was going to be a civil uprising, a civil war. You know, there were many attempts to foment violence, to cause, you know, mass social disintegration. It didn't happen. And what has happened this week is that we know that despite the threats of certain people who hold political sway, our democracy is resilient. Our judiciary is prepared to make brave, right decisions in defense of rule of law. As Raymond Zondo said, you know, the courts have again done the right thing. And, you know, there is a sense of tragedy over seeing Jacob Zuma. I mean, many people will disagree with me, but in the current situation that he finds himself. But we know that this democracy, with all its flaws, which was won with the blood of so many people, so many activists, many of whom, you know, remain unfound, is tenacious and it's resilient. And there will be efforts to disrupt it, but it seems to be withstanding them. And we can only hope and believe that it will continue to do so.
Karen Maughan, thank you very much indeed. Karen is legal journalist at News 24 and quite philosophical this evening too, but I think it's called for. It has. It's been a great week. It's another great week. I mean, we had a previous great week. Was it last week or the week before? I think it was probably the week before, the week of the reform announcements as they came through. It was significant. It really, really was. On to Putejo Mojapele, who is an aviation analyst. And we get Putejo. Hello. It's a bit of a noisy line where you are, but good to have you with us this evening. SAA and the South African Airline Pilots Association appear to have reached a compromise. It's going to see most of SAA's pilots retrenched. A handful will go forward to the new SAA, but it seems like progress on that particular front as well.
Yeah, Bruce, thank you very much. I think this was really been a very tedious process for SAA and the SAPA. They've been taking each other to court, and we know for a fact that for the new SAA 2.0 to materialize, SAA needed some of those guys that have been on strike for quite some time. And this agreement that we see today being agreed to or signed, I think it's paving the way for Takatso to start getting involved and, implementing the agreement that they've got with SAA on the consortium. But what I must say here is that the SAPA really got literally 10 out of 100 of the demands that they got. The winner here is the SAA, because when you look at the amount of court cases that they've been losing, I think one of the things that I think personally, I think they've been badly advised from the legal point of view. I think they could have read the situation much better. But looking at the situation, they had no choice but to accept what the situation was and to take what was on the table.
They've managed to keep their. Have the pilots been operating on full pay? Because you would imagine that you would draw this out for as long as possible in a world that isn't flying, where pilots have got few other options, that you might drag this out as long as possible, even though the end is inevitable, that most of your members will lose their jobs, I beg your pardon, as the airline contracts and becomes smaller and smaller, because only about 1,000 out of the original 6,000 people employed there a year ago still have jobs, don't they?
Yeah, what is going to be agreed here is that, as you know, that the cancellation of the RA regulating agreement, they agreed that it should be cancelled. However, they wanted to be paid for that cancellation, and SAA refused. Part of the issues that they were fighting for was to be paid for the cancellation of RA, and that is not going to happen. And some of the demands of the payments that they want, SAA was very clear about the how they are going to settle that, and it's not going to happen as they have expected. So, however, there's a bit of SAA is going to start with 88 pilots from the beginning of the when they start their new services on SAA 2.0 with Tatato. So what's going to happen is that we are going to have only literally 10 white males as well as 10 white females, and then the rest of the other will be on the blacks, you know, both colors and blacks and so on, mixed male and female. Now, the makeup of that would also grow as the airline increases the fleet and starts the new routes that they are planning to implement if that is going to be something that they're going to do. However, SAA do need these guys because some of them, they are training captains, and for the airline to go, you need these instructors and the training captains so that they can implement and make the airline pilots that are going to join to be competent to be able to fly the specific aircraft that will be trained on.
Potejo, thank you very much indeed. Potejo Mojapele, he is an aviation analyst this evening, an independent aviation analyst looking at SAA and an agreement ostensibly struck between the Pilots Association and the airline. That agreement will be taken to pilots over the weekend. I don't think there are too many options for the pilots to resist the changes that are coming at SAA.
The Money Show.
The Markets.
Nick Kunzer from Sundown Private Wealth. Markets don't seem too concerned with all of the rows, ructions and noise that is sort of captivating South Africans at the moment with the political fallout as the constitution is reinforced as the rule of law in South Africa. All stuff that you and I know is extraordinarily positive and great progress. But boy, it's been a noisy week politically and a very noisy week also on markets, but with nothing to do with South Africa, as it turns out.
Yes, evening, Bruce. Yeah, I had to chuckle to myself because I say we finished the week about 300 points up on the All Share, but that doesn't, as we both know, that doesn't really tell the real story of what we've done this week. Huge, huge intraday swings on the JSE as well as offshore markets. I mean, one of the biggest drops in Wall Street just yesterday, down almost 1%. And then again today, up 0.95. So we're actually come all the way back 24 hours later, not to mention what's been going on in the bond markets too. So, no, those market watchers out there who are following this, there's been some really wild swings this week.
What are the fundamental issues that are worrying markets at the moment? I mean, a month ago, it was whether U.S. interest rates would be going through the roof, and people were worried about that, and were watching the U.S. Treasury yield, and there was a real panic around that. That seems to have dissipated, and now it's about recovery and growth and jobs, I suppose.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think a lot to do with this. Look, there's still 1 hour on that yield curve, you know, in America. I mean, that those yield curve was 1.75, 1.8% at the start of the year. At one point yesterday, into the 120s. And for asset managers and traders out there, it's quite difficult to digest the difference between an interest rate that low and potential growth in the U.S. of 6.5-7%. And on top of that, of course, still alive and well is this, as you just said now, this swing between growth and value. You know, one day the NASDAQ up on the growth shares, and the one day the value shares like the Dow Jones is up. So it's also adding to the big swing. So that's pretty much the theme at the moment, Bruce.
And in South Africa, I mean, are we just following the world? Are there any sort of key themes playing out here?
Well, I think the news this week with Imperial is very positive for JSE shares. You know, obviously hot on the heels of Heineken and Distell. All of a sudden, where we might sort of always moan there's no value and nothing looks attractive in South Africa, clearly to the foreign element, they see value in South African shares. So I think that's a very positive for the week, I think, and a nice way to end the week too.
Yes, it's another asset that's out of our reach. It's another asset we can't invest in anymore. Mm-hmm. That leaves us with what, 1, 2, 4 shares we can invest in? I'm being facetious, of course, but I mean, it's making the South African universe smaller.
It is, and it's such a difficult one. I feel sorry for the ladies that run the JSE at the moment, because it's a tough one, because everywhere else you're getting this really IPO boom. Every other week there's another IPO listing. There's been a huge boom in these SPACs, these special acquisition vehicles as well. And yet we haven't seemed to have got that on the JSE. I'd like to know what the actual number is, but very few listings on the JSE in 2021. Look, I think a lot of it's out of their control. You know, we are in a country which has very little growth at the moment compared to elsewhere. But still, I mean, I think that's what they need to address. We need to attract more listings, certainly to replace the ones that are now leaving in droves.
Absolutely. And that person, the lady who runs the JSE, Nick Kunzer, 3, 2, 1, Leila Faree is her name. Leila Faree. My producer, Tikiso, is sending me WhatsApps, shouting at me, saying, it's the JSE CEO, Leila Faree. I knew that, Tikiso. Nick Kunzer, thank you very much indeed. Nick Kunzer is portfolio manager at Sanlam Private Wealth, tonight's market commentator. Yeah, well, up 300 points on the week. Who would have thought, after all of the volatility that we've had to endure?
You're with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
Boris Johnson's going very Jacob Zuma. My goodness gracious me. Remember that because Christmas and New Year were falling on weekends in the last couple of weeks of Jacob Zuma's presidency, he decided that we should just, yeah, declare the period between Christmas and New Year public holidays or something and give everybody off. It was this insane period. But yeah, I suppose if you're going to win a soccer match, yeah, give the country a weekend off. Why not? The Money Show brought to you by Absa. We do more so that you can. That's Africanacity. Absa is a registered FSP.
The Money Show
with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
Welcome to The Money Show on this Friday evening. It's good to have you with us tonight. And there's a company called Nomu. You may have heard of them. You will closely associate them with hot chocolate, but they do make other stuff, believe it or not. Nomu Brands has been making food taste better for the last 21 years. A range of spices and herbs and rubs that'll be the envy of firms many, many times its size. But when you think of Nomu, more than often or not, it's going to be associated with hot chocolate, because that is the focus of its advertising. Paul Raffaele is the co-founder and director at Nomu Brands. Why have you chosen, Paul, to narrow in on such a small category in the broader scheme of things?
Hi, Bruce. Well, look, as always, thanks for having us. The fundamental reality of hot chocolate is that everybody underestimates it. We introduced the hot chocolate more as a joke about 13 years ago or so, roughly. And since then, several other brands have entered the fray. I think it's one of those things that many of us grew up with, but many of us never realized that, like, several million households enjoy this sort of thing daily. It's a bit like toothpaste, I suppose. So in our case, we produced the skinny hot chocolate, which for us was like a personal indulgence. It was something we really loved. And we were the most surprised out of everybody that it became the number one seller. So, I mean, you've known us for a long time. As with everything, these things seem to be slightly accidental, but we would never say that in public, ever.
And here's the thing. I mean, it's a really interesting category. I mean, of your total sales, because you do have a wide array of products, how many now? Surely more than 50 products, individual products?
In all honesty, we have roughly 200 different 200? SKUs. Yeah, believe it or not, actually. Look, I mean, it was a survival strategy a couple of years ago. We had to open our doors to private label. The quality of what we do did attract a number of customers. So we've been able, thankfully, to actually grow the Nomu brand alongside helping other people to grow theirs at the same time. But, you know, Tracy's great indulgence in life is that, you know, she gets to produce products that excite her. And my problem is I'm completely powerless to stop her. So she just keeps producing amazing new things and I just have to take them to market. That's the deal, you know. But to answer your question, that the hot chocolates as a category at the moment make up probably between 50 and 58% of what we do totally. Yeah, believe it or not. And in fact, where we're seeing some of the fastest growth for this one product, the skinny hot chocolate, that's the diabetic-friendly one, the low GI, all of that, you know, we're seeing enormous growth in that into the Northern Hemisphere in a sense that they've never really known about us before. And it's perhaps, I don't know if, you know, sort of being stuck at home, the sort of the COVID effect has helped us slightly. But hot chocolate has completely become the runaway star amongst the stable, which is not to say that, you know, the rubs and the grinders and the olive oil, all the other stuff that we do don't make a meaningful contribution. They do. But hot chocolate, I think, has maybe performed a more comforting role in a lot of people's lives over the last couple of years. And you know, we've been, I suppose, well positioned to help there, I hope. You know, it's early days still.
In that 50 to 60% share, though, of your sales, overall sales, I mean, is that significantly higher than it was 12, 18 months ago?
Actually, no. I mean, the hot chocolate has definitely been the star performer for the last 6 or 7 years, I'd say, actually. What has changed dramatically in our lives is that with the advent of things like Amazon, for example, internationally, that's allowed us to circumvent a lot of sort of traditional distribution norms. You know, in the old days, you would need a third party importer distributor in another market to approach you and then probably cherry pick from your range which items you'd like. But with other sort of online channels that are now available, we can sell what we want directly to a consumer without having to go through a traditional buyer. So whereas here in South Africa, we still have a really great working relationship with all the retailers. And, you know, we have a selection of products, a whole basket of goods that we take. When it comes to accessing overseas markets, Amazon has totally changed the game. So has Ocado, all those sorts of channels.
And as far as their importance in your distribution strategy, I mean, what sort of percentage of your sales then are going global versus South African?
So I don't know if you remember, a couple of years ago, I sort of had this throwaway remark, which also caught you a bit on the back foot. In like 2008, 2009, we went.
I was younger then. I was more easily influenced. Yeah.
Look, so were we all. But you know, back then, you recall with the global the sort of the banking shift that happened, if we can call it that. We went from about 86% export, which had been our pattern since we started in 2000. We went from 86% export to roughly 14 or 15% export in about 10 months. So we suffered a complete reversal. And we've been slowly building that back in. But, you know, the nature of sort of online and digital supply straight to consumer is very much something that's come to the forefront for us in the last, I'd say, in the last 2-3 years. And it's not something we're doing perfectly. We're kind of learning, as I think a lot of other people are doing. But the hot chocolate, it is remarkable how the hot chocolate has sort of rushed to the front to fulfill a very specific need in a lot of those markets, which, you know, we have to be honest, obviously dwarf the South African market overall. I mean, America is vast. And so, in a sense, you only need one all-star product that really ticks a lot of boxes in another market to kind of totally shift your outlook. So as a company, you know, we're often trying to balance our love for the entire family of products versus where we see the greatest growth, which amazingly seems to be coming from hot chocolate, this staple idea, you know.
And again, it's something that one would assume is fairly, it's a hard place to compete. You know, Cadbury's, I don't know if they've still got a product on the shelves. They had a hot chocolate at one time, and Nestle had a hot chocolate at one time. I don't know if they're still in the market. I really don't. Well, I think they probably are.
Let me answer that for you, actually. Cadbury's, from what I can gather, and I don't know all the facts, but Cadbury's made a global realignment decision when they were absorbed by Mondelez, and they chose to, from what I can gather, they chose to disregard the South African market as being largely peripheral. And that served our interests. We attacked at that moment and tried our very best to try convince as many people as we could that, you know, we were a more than adequate successor to that brand. And I think we've done that. I hope we've done that. Nestle, the largest food business in the world, remains my number one competitor, which for a 66-man outfit next to the Cape Town airport, I quite enjoy that. You know, I'm loath to use David and Goliath analogies, but, you know, I do quite enjoy getting out of bed and going to souk with Nestle every day. It's quite fun, actually, because, in South Africa, you can actually do that. It's astonishing. And I do think that we are bringing a very good product to the market, which is also something you can do in South Africa. So despite all the news and stuff, I remain problematically optimistic.
No, you don't have to be problematically optimistic. You can just be optimistic, because in the chaos, there is always opportunity. I read that somewhere in a book. So when you look at innovating the product and when you look at growing the segment, I mean, there's hot chocolate. You did a sugar-free hot chocolate, which essentially, I think, was cocoa powder. Forgive me. And then your diabetic-friendly hot chocolate. There aren't too many ways of slicing and dicing this category. It then becomes a volume game, does it?
I think ultimately it does. I mean, we have the benefit of still being in a space where we can play. You know, South Africa is still a very sort of good news economy type of place. So if you do bring a degree of innovation, there's always going to be space for you. We tried that completely sugarless, sugar-free, non-artificially sweetened one that was called the unsweetened cocoa drink. And that's actually been a humble success in its own sense. The fact of the matter is, within the South African market, most people still prefer sugar. So we see the Just Add Water, the instant traditional hot chocolate, that is a great performer. But the skinny hot chocolate, which was the first hot chocolate we produced, I mean, till this day, it remains the most wonderful sort of accidental surprise to us. It was Tracy's invention to stop me from drinking the other instant hot chocolates that were available at the time that were loaded down with sugar and very little cocoa, as it turns out. So Tracy's cleverness there was to make it all about the cocoa and find a great way to sweeten it that could take all the sugar out. So to my knowledge, I don't really think there's anything out there that can compete in terms of the overall list of functional things that we do, but more than anything else, it just tastes great. So you know, I suppose the big question is, how come no one else has done it? I don't know, but let's hope they don't.
Here's the thing. I mean, you're trying to provoke a fight in the category, and nobody seems to be stepping up to the plate to fight with you. And it must be horrible to want to box and nobody's coming to market. You produce a range of adverts. Pardon?
You know, I'm saying if you're Paul, yes, it is very frustrating.
Exactly. you've had hands over mugs of hot chocolate saying, no, thank you, I'd rather have no moo. And it's evocative of similar adverts. I think Schweppes had a similar campaign many, many years ago. No, I'd rather have Schweppes, thank you very much. And nobody's really responding to your fight. I mean, either they're complacent or they're just not willing to play your game and give you the publicity that you so enjoy.
Well, Bruce, it's entirely possible that our biggest competitor really doesn't care. You know, I don't know. I mean, it's possible that the average hot chocolate customer, perhaps we are trying to create a conversation where there isn't any. I mean, I'm not going to pretend like, you know, there isn't a degree of trouble causing that's at the root of our personality. I mean, we do have fun with this sort of stuff. The ad with the handover, I mean, that comes from years of people sending us just the most wonderfully passionate support for the product, where people literally have said, if it's not Nomu, I'm not drinking it. You know, like we have some of the most wonderful consumers, and they are customers and fans and friends. And these people have been with us since the beginning. So when you present them with other hot chocolates, they literally will say, no, thank you, not a chance. And we just felt like it had come to a point over the last 18, 19 months, which have not been easy for a lot of people, that we also felt like sort of trying to raise the bar slightly, sort of maybe bring a bit of conversation to a category that, if you think about it, really has absolutely nothing going on in it. I mean, I would defy anyone to bring me anybody else's hot chocolate advertising. So perhaps I am trying to start a fight where there is nothing, or maybe it's just fun to bring a bit of light and conversation quite drab.
Yeah, there's a future of politics for you somewhere, I suppose. I mean, you could start a fight.
Oh, God, no.
In an empty bag. Listen, Paul, thank you very much for chatting this evening. And it's, yeah, lovely to have you on. Paul Raffaele, who is the co-founder of Nomu Brands. His wife, Tracy, is the brains of the, is the originator of the operations and the recipes and everything else. It's astounding. I mean, that hot chocolate is such a huge component of the overall business. It is amazing to see. Well, coming up on the next Money Show, we're going to talk to Themba Maseko. Themba was the Government Communication Information Systems CEO and then became a whistleblower against the Guptas. He's going to join us on Other People's Money to talk about his relationship with money and what helps you say no in the face of corruption. Plus, our business books feature is all about belonging, an ancient code of togetherness. It's by a guy called Owen Eastwood. That is all coming up next time on The Money Show.
You're with Bruce Whitfield on 702.
702.
My fault. Usually I give you the brutal quiz question before we go into that ad break. I'm so sorry. My fault entirely. Bos Brands gets its name from which South African indigenous plant? Please give us a call as quick as you can because I'd like to get a game of the Brutal Biz quiz going this evening. Bos Brands gets its name from which South African indigenous plant? That is your first question in tonight's Brutal Biz quiz. 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702. Fastest fingers get an opportunity to play tonight's Brutal Biz quiz. We'd love you to join us and play that particular game as we wrap up this evening's, this first half of The Money Show this evening. And then, of course, between 7 and 8, we've got the best bits of The Money Show, and we look forward to sharing those with you as well. It's looking like it's going to be a great weekend in both Cape Town and in Gauteng this weekend. Fairly mild temperatures for winter in Gauteng, with dropping to zero on Wednesday morning. Back to sub-zero temperatures in Joburg on Wednesday morning. The rain in Cape Town returns on Monday. Heavy rainfall forecast for Monday. Brutal Biz quiz time. Bos Brands gets its name from which South African indigenous plant? Victor in Joburg, what is your first answer this evening?
Rooibos.
Rooibos is absolutely right. It's not that hard, you see. Earlier this week, the chief executive of Bos Brands, William Battersby, usually I give you some applause here, Victor, but Joe's not in the mood. William Battersby, we talked to him about expanding his footprint. Again, a bit like Nomu, going global, and Bos Brands going to China for, as an export market. Which province paid Microsoft this week in dollars instead of rands?
Oh, I guess Western Cape.
Oh, I'm afraid not, Victor. I'm afraid not. It's not the Western Cape. 021. Oh, so Joe will give you the R, but not the applause, Victor. He's very judgmental, is our Joe. 021-446-0567, 011-883-0702. Some official in a provincial department or in, yeah, it was a provincial department. An official in a provincial department this week paid a bill in dollars instead of rand, paid $20 million instead of 20 million rand as per e-government payment, and the cost of Microsoft fees. And it saw more than 318 million rand debited from the e-government bank account. The error was made. The provincial treasury then recalled the full amount from Microsoft, but 6 million rand was lost due to a change in the exchange rate. Which government department, which provincial government was it? Mashudu in Randburg. Mashudu, which province was it?
Gauteng.
It was Gauteng, I'm afraid. Yes, it was. Absolutely. Mashudu, what has been banned from the Summer Olympics in Tokyo? Summer Olympics due to get underway this week. A spike in COVID has led to them banning what?
Can you repeat the question again?
Mashudu, something has been banned from the Olympics this week. What has been banned?
Sure. Okay.
No, I'm afraid not. Mashudu, not hearing each other this evening. Henry in Germiston, what has been banned from the Summer Olympics this week?
A swimming cap for
summers,
am I correct?
No, you're not, I'm afraid, Henry. You're not. So I think I might win this edition of the game because you guys are not able to come up with an answer. I need an answer very, very quickly. What is being banned from the Olympics this week. What is your answer going to be this evening? Justin in Bedford View. I need Justin, please, sticky saw. Justin in Bedford View.
It's spectators, Bruce.
Spectators have been banned. Absolutely right, Justin. And then one last question. Who said this week the clock must untick itself?
Edward Zuma.
Justin, you make the bet. Makes you the whiz of the biz quiz. Edward Zuma, former President Jacob Zuma's son, inmate Jacob Zuma's son, Edward Zuma, the young Zuma, told journalists that when they asked him whether the clock was ticking for his arrest, and minutes after this, of course, Jacob Zuma handed himself over to police. Coming up after Eyewitness News, the best bits of the Money Show between 7 and 8 this evening.